This is KOOP HD1 HD3 Hornsby. Welcome to Civil Rights and Wrongs, the state of your civil liberties in the Lone Star State. The views expressed here are not necessarily those of the co-op board of directors, staff, volunteers, or underwriters. Welcome to a special edition of Civil Rights and Wrongs on Co-op 91.7 in Austin, streaming through koop.org. I'm your host, Bob Daly. All of our shows on Co-op these days are home-crafted, since our studios are still closed. Tonight we present highlights from a webinar produced by Equality Texas in early April, from their website, equalitytexas.org. In the next few months, the Supreme Court of the United States, SCOTUS, will announce a decision on a set of landmark cases for LGBTQ Americans. The court heard oral arguments last October, and like many of us, the court is working from home, meaning that a decision could come down any day. With this decision, the court has a chance to affirm employment non-discrimination protections for the LGBTQ community under Title VII of current civil rights law. For those of us living in Texas without any statewide non-discrimination protections, this decision is especially crucial. If the court rules against us, it will roll back some of the few existing protections for LGBTQ folks at the federal level. Regardless of how the court rules, Equality Texas implores legislators to pass statewide and federal non-discrimination protections that ensure that no one should have to worry about being fired from a job, evicted from an apartment, or turned away at the corner store because of who you are or whom you love. The following webinar took place in the first week of April. It is hosted by Rachel Hill and Ricardo Martinez from Equality Texas. The panelists are Brian Klosterboer from the ACLU, Shannon Minter from the National Center for Lesbian Rights, and Shelley Skeen from Lambda Legal.
My name is Rachel Hill. I am the Community Outreach and Engagement Manager for Equality Texas for the North Half. And we have three lovely panelists, and we're going to teach you about the Supreme Court cases that we have coming up, different implications of the decision, what the question is, and then also how you can get plugged in while we're waiting for a decision to come down. So we're going to start with a quick introduction from our CEO, Ricardo Martinez, and then go into the actual panel and wrap up with a live Q&A and wrap everything up. So I will kick it over to Ricardo to go ahead and start us off.
Hi, everybody. I'm super excited that there are 37 people on this call. It's really encouraging to see so many people thirsty for this knowledge and clarity around a really important issue. So my name is Ricardo Martinez, and I'm the Chief Executive Officer for Equality Texas. And on behalf of our staff and our board and steering committee members in Dallas, I just want to thank you for making time to attend tonight's briefing. The last month has been pretty brutal for many of us, and I just want to acknowledge that it takes a lot of strength and resilience to show up actively and to be here today. So thank you very much for attending. Our work may be a little bit different, look a little different now, and focus digitally, but our mission to provide our community with issue education and engagement opportunities really remains the same. Tonight, as Rachel has stated, we're going to learn a little bit more about three LGBTQ employment discrimination cases that are going to determine federal law protects LGBTQ people. As some of you may know, these cases were argued in front of the U.S. Supreme Court last fall, and we are now awaiting decisions which would come between now and the end of June. Today, we are joined by a panel of experts from the ACLU, Lambda Legal, and the National Center for Lesbian Rights, who will walk us through the history of the cases, provide us with insight into the oral arguments that occurred last fall, and shed light on the importance of the decision to the LGBT community. So again, thank you very much for joining us tonight. And now I will turn it over to our host, Rachel Hill.
Thanks, Ricardo. Thank you for all the leadership you've shown during this time and since you've come on. It's been really great. And so I want to start off by having all of our panelists introduce themselves. Just say your name, your pronouns, where you work, and maybe if you can sum up your job in one sentence or less, go ahead and do that. Go ahead and start with Brian. You're the first face I see on my screen.
Great. Hey, everyone. It's so good to be with you. And, you know, it's just really nice to see people and kind of have this space and opportunity to gather and kind of talk about these issues and have some community even during these difficult times. So thanks for inviting me. I'm Brian Klosterboer. My pronouns are he, him, his. I'm an attorney at the ACLU of Texas based in our Houston office. I work primarily on LGBT rights, especially representing students in schools, primarily who are transgender or non-binary.
Awesome. And then let's go to Shannon.
Hey, everybody. My name is Shannon Minter. I use he, him pronouns. And I'm the legal director of the National Center for Lesbian Rights, where I oversee all of our litigation.
And then Shelley?
Yeah, Shelley Skeen. Welcome, everybody. I am a senior staff attorney for Lambda Legal in their Dallas office.
Thank you all for being here and for taking the time to share expertise. We really appreciate it. So with that, I will go into the program with the panel. I think I wanted to kick it off and start it with just a really basic question. I know a lot of us know that there's a decision coming out, but we may not know the details around it. So Shelley, what is the question that the Supreme Court is deciding on here?
I think the easiest way to talk about it is to say that Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964 protects people from discrimination in based on their race, color, national origin, and also their religion and their sex. And so the question before the court in the three cases is whether or not sexual orientation is encompassed by the word sex, or whether sex encompasses sexual orientation, and then also gender identity.
So we know that cases don't just show up at the Supreme Court without a face or a story behind it. Can you also tell us, Shelley, a little bit about the plaintiffs and their stories leading up to this?
Yeah, sure. And I'm going to tell my awesome cohorts, Shannon and Brian, to jump in anytime. But the first case, there are two sexual orientation cases. There's Gerald Bostick versus Clayton County, Georgia. And in that case, Gerald Bostick worked for the county in the Child Welfare Services Division for about 10 years. He got all kinds of awards and was the first, my understanding, child welfare worker who got full uptake in Clayton County with respect to the kids that were in the child welfare system. And he joined a gay softball league after he'd been there about 10 years. And shortly thereafter, he was fired. And the county claimed that he had borrowed some money, should we say, that he had not borrowed. So that's the Bostick case. The other case is Zarda versus Altitude Express, Donald Zarda. And this was a skydiving teacher. And he would, when he went on skydives, he would get strapped to the people that were with him in tandem so that they could jump out of the plane. And because you're strapped to somebody, he would often tell the women that he was strapped to that he was gay so that they wouldn't feel uncomfortable. And so he told one woman that, and then she told her boyfriend after they landed safely and claimed that he had misappropriately or inappropriately touched her. And so he was fired. And then the last case is what I'm going to call the Amy Stevens case. And in that case, you had a gentleman, or at least at the time, Amy Stevens, who worked for a funeral home as an embalmer and then later got promoted, worked there for about 7 years and had always felt that she was a woman. And so she decided to go on vacation and told her boss that she was going to come back and be a woman. And her boss fired her on the spot. And well, fired her on the spot and said some things that weren't so great. And so that's the third case. And so that's pretty much it.
Yeah, no, that's really helpful. I think a lot of the times we forget that, you know, a decision is more than just that. It's people's stories. And so now that we kind of have a little bit more of a grasp of what are the cases, what's the question, Shannon, I want to turn it over to you. There were oral arguments this past October. And if you could just give us an overview of what the key arguments were for each side and what the justices heard when all that was going on.
Sure. Well, the counsel representing, the attorneys representing the gay and transgender plaintiffs, both were trying to pitch their argument to the conservative justices because we have to get at least one conservative justice to vote our way in order to win the case. So they were making very conservative arguments and saying that even if you courts, even if you understand the term sex in Title VII in the most narrow, plain meaning sense of the term is referring to a person's sex at birth or so-called biological sex, we should still win these cases because you can't even identify a person as being gay or lesbian without taking their sex into account, their so-called biological sex. And same with a transgender person. You can't even define what it means to be transgender, somebody whose gender identity doesn't match their birth sex without taking their birth sex into account. So they, you know, made a kind of valiant effort to reach those conservative justices. What happened, probably predictably, I guess, is that there was obsessive focus on bathrooms, on transgender people in bathrooms. That really almost hijacked the argument, both arguments, even the one that was supposed to be about sexual orientation. The justices started asking about transgender people in bathrooms. So that was kind of a, you know, painful thing to have to watch. It was interesting though, just real quick, just a little roster of who said what. The justices were kind of a mix of very predictable and then in some ways like sort of unpredictable. Like on the predictable side, Chief Justice Roberts and Justice Alito were both pretty openly not very friendly to our side's arguments or claims. And then Justice Ginsburg, who's so great always, and Justice Breyer and Justice Kagan, they were probably also predictably, you know, pretty friendly to our side's claims and trying to help out the counsel on our side of the case. But the two surprises were on the conservative side. Justice Gorsuch, I think, did surprise people by, he's very conservative, appointed by Trump, of course, but he at least appeared to be grappling in a serious way with the arguments presented by the attorneys on our side for Amy and the two gay male plaintiffs. And so he certainly at least wanted to leave everyone with the impression that he was potentially, possibly, maybe open to ruling with the plaintiffs. And then the other surprise was actually Justice Sotomayor, who is very progressive, a wonderful, brilliant, smart justice, but who honestly asked some pretty troubling questions that appeared to give more credence than you would expect she would give to concerns about transgender people using restrooms that match their gender identity. So it was a very interesting argument.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Thank you for breaking that down for us. I know we at Equality Texas have seen the straw man of sports participation and bathrooms a lot. So it's not surprising, but still troubling to hear that it's all the way up at the Supreme Court as well.
Sports stuff did come up too.
Yeah.
The sports issue definitely was raised in a very kind of pointed way.
So you did kind of cover how the justices reacted. So I do want to kind of pivot it over to Brian and say, so now that we kind of have a feel for what the arguments were, at least on our side, and how the justices reacted and getting a feel for where they might or might not be going, what potential impact broadly does this decision have on the LGBT community?
Definitely. Yeah, I agree completely with Shannon. I think the oral arguments were like some of the worst and most like troubling that I've heard. I think the arguments on the briefs in these cases were incredibly strong. As Shannon was saying, there's an extremely clear textual argument. You cannot discriminate against someone for being transgender without taking into account their sex assigned at birth and also the stereotypes associated with that. And the Supreme Court has been extremely clear since Price Waterhouse was decided in the 80s that sex stereotyping and taking action against someone for not conforming to the sex stereotypes of society is discrimination based on sex. So it was like very, very frustrating at oral argument. Like Justice Gorsuch even said, the textual evidence is very close and they didn't talk about that at all. They got completely sidetracked. As Shannon mentioned, I did a kind of a control F, a look through the transcript. And in the Amy Stevens case, dress codes were talked about 31 times.
Wow.
And bathrooms were mentioned 25 times. The whole argument was not about the legal arguments in the case. The one legal argument that the anti-LGBT groups really brought to this case was that the intent of Congress in 1964 could not possibly have contemplated any protections for LGBT people. So that was the argument that they had pushed in their briefs, which is also ironic because that's exactly the opposite of what conservatives typically argue. They typically say you should never take into account the intent of Congress. You should always look at the text. But here they said, oh no, don't look at the text because the textual arguments are very clear that, you know, sex is sex and that's covered and you can't really get around that. But here they were talking about the intent, but even during oral argument, they just got completely sidetracked. The very first question from the Chief Justice was about bathrooms. And I think for me, my main takeaway was that shows that the work that a lot of you in this webinar are doing is the work that needs to be done. You know, we can't wait for the Supreme Court to tell us what our rights are and to kind of push the ball forward. They are at least one decade, if not several decades behind where society is. In my job, I work with students in schools. Many of them are non-binary. Many of them understand that things like sex-based dress codes don't make sense. They don't include everyone and they're just stupid. Like, we don't need them. But the Supreme Court, even Sotomayor, as Shannon mentioned, Sotomayor was asking questions about, well, don't we have to have a dress code and a single-sex bathrooms? And so there's a lot of work to do, I think, societally, changing the culture and changing people's hearts and minds. And this court was very far from that, unfortunately.
And I do just want to ask you a question to clarify there for us non-lawyers on the call. When you say textual argument, is that like the argument about the text of Title VII? Is that what you mean by that?
Yes.
Okay. Just wanted to make sure.
Yeah, it's like the words mean what they say. And when they say you shall not discriminate based on sex, for gender identity especially, that means you are taking into account the sex of the person when you are discriminated against them. For the sexual orientation, it's like one step removed. At that point, you're taking into account the sex that someone is attracted to or dating or, you know, having a relationship with. So there is like one small step. So this is also jumping ahead. But I do think the textual argument is even stronger for trans rights, which is really good because, you know, trans people have often been left behind sometimes in the LGBT movement. And at least here, there's less risk of that happening because if anything, Amy Stevens' case is even slightly stronger.
This is Shelley. Can I add one thing, Rachel?
Yeah, absolutely.
I think Shannon would be really great to talk about this for a second. During the oral arguments, Justice Gorsuch said that there would be a massive social upheaval if they ruled to allow, for example, transgender people to go into the bathroom that they identify with. And so I think there's a great argument that shows that that's not true. And so I'm going to let Shannon talk about it because I know he knows, but more or less, right, Shannon, we've had 20 plus years of that being not a problem. And so that's more, it shows us how much work we have to do as a community to inform the judges because they did seem very, very uneducated on just LGBT language and what it means. And Shannon, I'll shut up. Go ahead and maybe if you would talk about that, because I think it's important.
Oh, Shelley, what you said was very eloquent and perfect. Yes, and Brian, yeah, Steve, when you were talking, yes, this argument, folks, was a huge wake-up call for our legal movement, but also for the broader movement. There is a chasm between the understanding of transgender people that we've seen in the lower federal courts. I mean, we've got like 25 years of almost unanimous positive decisions from federal judges, including some very conservative federal judges, holding that, yes, of course, discrimination against a person who's transgender is sex discrimination. What else could it be? And then more recently, we don't have the same length of judges about sexual orientation, but in the past, like a little bit, there's a lot of unanimity on that. But it was shocking to see clearly this was the justices on the Supreme Court, including ones that you would expect to be a little more supportive and sympathetic, were clearly kind of at the very beginning to understand anything about transgender identity or transgender people. And it was really scary and really sobering and should tell us all that, you know, the number one takeaway from that argument is, oh my gosh, we need people to vote and we need to do community organizing and political organizing because, yeah, the current court is a long way from understanding our issues. But yeah, of course, Shelley, you're right. Like we've had you know, transgender people, of course, are using the right bathrooms and the right locker rooms all over the country, including right here in Texas.
The main takeaway that trans people have been doing what they need to do for years everywhere, and it's been fine. Did you want to add?
Oh, that's it. You got it. I'm sorry. It's so annoying when you break up. Sorry about that. No, that's it.
You're good.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think. And that's good to know because I think a lot of us know how important this decision is, but it, especially for folks working on the ground, it seems so far away and so high up. It's good to make those direct connections between the work we do on the ground and what effect we can have on a federal level, even in the courts. So I appreciate y'all, all three of y'all doing that. I do want to move into the decision a little bit. It looks like we have about 15 minutes more of the panel part. And so, Shelley, if you could just tell us like a very 10,000 foot overview, because we're going to get into the specific decisions a little bit later, but why is this decision in general important?
Okay, the reason is because the word sex is included in multiple federal laws, among them housing, Title IX, which has to do with education, we've got healthcare, and so, however, the court determines the word sex, whether or not it includes sexual orientation and gender identity, will likely have spillover effects into all of the other federal laws that use the word sex where you don't also have sexual orientation and gender identity in the specific express language of the particular law at issue.
That's helpful. Yeah, I think honestly, that's a personal question that I had and that's answered on how wide a scope this could be. Shannon, I'm going to turn it back to you for the specific decisions that could come out. I know that there are different mixes here. Could you just kind of take us through what could happen?
Sure, I could do that really fast. I just want to underscore what Shelley just said, though. There's so much at stake: education, healthcare, housing. It's big, y'all. Well, I mean, the what could happen, it's not that complicated. We could theoretically possibly win both of them. That would be amazing, obviously. So, you know, maybe we'll get Gorsuch. So we could win both of them. We could lose both of them. The court could split and rule in favor of the gay plaintiff and against the transgender plaintiff or vice versa. As Brian noted, like the sort of conventional legal wisdom, part because of all that case law I mentioned, is that you would think that if anything, the arguments for the transgender plaintiff are stronger. But after that argument, I would actually say if there's any chance of them splitting the decision, I almost think it's more likely they'd rule for the gay plaintiff because that doesn't raise the bathroom questions. And they were just so obsessed with those bathroom questions that I almost think it's, if there is a chance of them splitting, I'd put my money on the gay plaintiffs. But all this said, I'll just go out on a limb and do something you should never do, which is like make a prediction that I think the most likely thing is a decision in both cases that's going to just be very confusing. That's not going to say definitively no protection, but it's also not going to say that by definition, if you're discriminated against for being gay, you're covered. And by definition, you're discriminated against for being transgender, you're covered. I think it's going to be something very ambiguous and confusing and kind of hard to unpack. So I want to underscore that distinct possibility, because we all need to be ready for that and not be thrown off by that. Like, the last thing we want, that is going to effectively be a loss. Let's just say we don't want the court to kind of throw sand in our eyes and we're sort of caught flat-footed and not doing what we need to do, which is mobilize the heck out of our community to get out there and vote and to pass federal and state legislation. So that's why I'm kind of belaboring this point a little bit. Do not be confused if what we see is something that's like, well, it's kind of a, not exactly a win, but not exactly a loss. Something like that is a loss, really. And we need to just get out there and get our community up in arms.
And we had a question in the chat. We're holding most questions for after, but this one is specifically addressing that point. Jody asks, what would that look like? So like a complicated decision. And Jody, feel free to type in the chat if I am misunderstanding this. But they're asking if you can give an example of like a confusing decision.
Yeah, like, you know, they could, for example, say, well, of course, like a gay person or a transgender person, of course, they can bring a sex discrimination claim if they're discriminated against based on sex. You know, for example, if they're discriminated against, if you're a gay man, for being perceived as feminine or something like that. But that doesn't mean that anytime an employer discriminates based on sexual orientation, that's not automatically or categorically covered. I mean, there's some federal courts that actually did that kind of splitting the baby thing with gay plaintiffs, and it's just created tons of confusion, because then you have all these lower courts going, I don't know, you know, every time it's a gay plaintiff in a Title VII case, like, you'll have different courts ruling differently based on identical facts, because they're trying to figure out what is that mysterious line between when does discrimination based on sex stereotypes and discrimination based on someone being gay, how to draw that line, because really you can't, but the court could do that. The thing I'm really afraid of on the transgender case is that they may say, oh, sure, like a transgender person can't be discriminated against for, again, for deviating from or departing from gender stereotypes, but nothing in Title VII requires an employer to accommodate gender transition. So, you know, they could be like, if you're like me, a transgender man, if, you know, if an employer discriminates against me because I'm too masculine for someone they view as a woman, okay, maybe you have some protection there, but that doesn't mean they would have to let me use the men's restroom or present myself as male or interact with other people as male. That would really be quite devastating, but I think it's something that the court might do.
Yeah, that's helpful for it to know. And I know when a decision comes out, we're all going to be looking to y'all to help us interpret it. And with that, a quick plug, like Equality Texas on Decision Day, decision can come out anytime from now through June. And we, on Decision Day, we will have a community gathering where we talk about the decision and what it means once we actually have one. But so going over the cases, this is a watershed moment for our community, for sure. The one through line I've seen through everybody is the gravity of this.
We have to take a quick station break, but we'll be right back. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Civil Rights and Wrongs on Co-op 91.7 in Austin, streaming through koop.org. I'm Bob Daly. We're listening to a webinar produced by Equality Texas in early April. The subject is employment non-discrimination protection, with three cases currently before the U.S. Supreme Court. Rulings are expected imminently. Let's continue with the webinar.
I do want to talk about something that we do have no matter how the justices rule. And Brian, I want to pitch this to you. What rights will we still have regardless of the outcome? So even if they rule completely not in our favor, or if it's a really confusing ruling, what can we still lean on that we know we have?
Definitely, yeah. As Shannon said, I think like the court doesn't often, it could be like a huge win if they said that this kind of discrimination is always illegal. Like, that would be amazing, because we could take that and run with it in a lot of different contexts, as Shelley was saying. But if they still leave some piece of it, like sex stereotyping is still illegal, then, you know, there might be ways that we can work with that and keep moving. A lot of our clients here in Texas, so we are seeing tremendous progress on the ground, even in school districts and communities that you would not expect to be affirming of trans students. Thousands and thousands of trans students are coming out across the state and transitioning in schools. And we are seeing every single district that we work in now essentially like understand that they have to help these students, support these students. So we are seeing tremendous progress. And we're also seeing a lot of cities across Texas passing non-discrimination ordinances and trying to create local rights. So those rights should not be affected directly by this decision. As Shelley was saying, things tend to trickle down, and Title VII is an important statute, but it's not the Constitution. I do think this is fundamentally different from the marriage cases, which were about a constitutional right that we really had to look to the Supreme Court for. But this is about a statute that was passed by Congress in 1964. So you can tell it definitely needs to be updated, and people, LGBTQ community needs to be fully and explicitly included in that. So on the national level, we are pushing very hard for the passage of the Equality Act, provide full non-discrimination protections to people in all different areas, such as housing, employment, education. I know here in Texas, Equality Texas is also working on creating plans for a statewide non-discrimination ordinance so that we can protect people all across the state. And then even in our local communities, wherever we can get them, getting even big companies to make sure they don't discriminate against their employees. A lot of our employers here in Texas now understand that and have been very supportive during the legislative session, getting school districts, municipalities, whatever kind of protections we can have in place. We don't need to then wait for the Supreme Court to decide what people's rights are.
Yeah, awesome. Thank you. That's so empowering to hear. I do want to kind of underscore that point a little bit as well. So let's say everything goes great. Everything goes ideally. The court rules in the favor of the plaintiffs in both cases. Do we still need to push for all of those local, state, and federal non-discrimination protections?
Absolutely. As Shannon mentioned before, some people joined the call. The courts are being stacked against us with a lot of anti-LGBT judges. So we can absolutely not be waiting. Even if we get a full win across the board, it's going to be a long fight to take the victory and bring it into these other areas. It'll be much easier if we have legislation and political power. And as we were talking about the education piece too, the cultural change and cultural shift, there's just so much misunderstanding and homophobia and especially transphobia out there that we have to fight.
Yeah, go ahead, Shelley.
Just real quick, just to give an example of how truly, truly important you all are, I think that Brian's absolutely right, and so is Shannon. The way to fight this is with the Equality Act, but that's on a national level. And if that doesn't happen, it's in every city, every county, and our state as a whole. And so in Texas, we're one of five states that has no public accommodations laws. One of five out of all the states. And then when it comes to employment, we're in one of the states that has no protections in employment either or in housing. So when you look at where we rank on the overall list with respect to those, we get an F. And our non-discrimination ordinances need to be beefed up. We have less than one-fifth of our population is covered by those non-discrimination ordinances. And frankly, they don't have any teeth at all. So I'll be quiet now.
No, you're good. It's great. I mean, that's the work that we're pushing. And at the end of the webinar, we're going to have a call to action and show you where you can join in on pushing for local, state, and federal non-discrimination protections, as we mentioned. But before we get to that, I do want to open it up to questions for the audience. Now, I don't think I'm sharing my screen anymore. I can't tell. But I'm sure we're all Zoom experts at this point in this social distancing. So you can either put a question in the chat or you can go down to the bottom where it says participants and raise your hand. And we will unmute folks one by one to go ahead and ask questions. So I will open up the floor for that right now.
Rachel, while you're doing that, and I'll just stop if we get a question, I just wanted to underscore though what Shelley and Brian said, that I mean, in my view, even if a miracle happens and we somehow were to win this Supreme Court case, y'all live in this state, as do I, and I was born and raised here. Like, you all know that that alone is not going to change the attitudes of people in this state, and that the only thing that will is getting to know people in their own communities and passing, which is the way we can pass these local laws, and then eventually, as improbable as it seems right now with our current state legislature, we will be able eventually to pass a state law. But there is just no substitute for that face-to-face contact and all the community building and public education work that Equality Texas is doing. I mean, that is how we make permanent, lasting change.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, we still, some of the bills we fight session after session are just bringing in like state statutes in line with what the Supreme Court has already ruled in Lawrence v. Texas and others. And so I think that's absolutely true, in that like one real meaningful path, especially for Texas, is going to be making sure the those protections are explicit in ordinances, municipal ordinances, and state law.
We have a question in the chat for any of the panelists. From Gary Schumann. He's asking, when can we most likely expect a decision?
Brian, do you want to answer that?
I would defer to you.
Well, the next date, we thought it might be today. I was sweating bullets. It wasn't. The next date that it's likely is the 21st. But then, so it'll either be then or any, it's going to be soon. It's going to be soon because the Supreme Court is no longer, because of the pandemic, they're not hearing any oral arguments. So all they have to do is sit around and write their decisions. So while before that, everyone thought it might be not till like June, even the end of June, till we got this decision. Now everyone's like, oh my gosh, it's probably going to be like any minute now, because that's all they have to do. So get ready.
That's bad news. I was mentally hoping we're not there. We'll prepare.
I was glad it wasn't today. Thank you again for having this webinar, because I'm not sure everybody knows about it yet, and we're just not ready. So it's so great to have, you know, webinars like this so that we have a chance to reach more people, so more people are ready. Because if we lose, we just really need to set ourselves on fire in terms of organizing and lighting a fire under the community in Texas and everywhere else.
Yeah, absolutely. And Equality Texas, as I mentioned earlier, will be sending an email alert on decision day when it comes out. It will be on our website. It's not up yet, but we are building a page for resources related to the Title VII cases. And so at any time, you can go to our website and see kind of this webinar recording will be on there, as well as some other resources about the cases, about what you can do to help. And that will also show whether a decision has been released, and we'll put whatever outcome it is on there as well. But we will have a virtual gathering, even though we can't rally in person, we will rally via Zoom, and really there have a place to celebrate or to get ready to act.
I would just like to add something, Rachel, really quick.
Yeah.
This is going to be one moment in a short timeline of big moments, right? We're 8 months away from the next legislative session. And however this goes, we are going to have to fight, right? And we're going to depend on the drive, the determination, and the passion that all of our community has shown to us in the past. And I think we're getting ahead of it, right? We're increasing education so that everyone has general awareness about the issues that are important and everything that's at stake and at play here. But we're also trying to empower as many individuals to kind of understand their own personal power and how that power compounds when we gather as a group, right? And as a unit. And I think I'm encouraged by the 50 people that showed up today to learn a little bit more. I'm encouraged that so many people will be able to access this really incredible information. And regardless of how it goes, we've been through tough situations before and we've come out on top and we're resilient. And that I know for a fact. So that is all.
Yeah, absolutely.
So this is Shelley again. I'm going to put Shannon on the spot one more time. There's another couple of cases that are pending before the Supreme Court right now that have to do with the ministerial exception and whether or not a teacher, at least in one of them, can claim that. And so I think as a sort of looking ahead, another place where we're going to have to fight, and we had to fight at the last legislative session here in Texas, was with respect to how broad are religious exemptions or religious rights And Trump has already, in every way he possibly can, has tried to make those very, very broad. So Shannon, if you, maybe Brian can too, just quickly on the couple of cases that are pending, because that's going to come down too.
It sure is. Oh, yeah. Look, y'all, this time next year, the whole constitutional landscape is going to look very different. The Supreme Court is being very radical in taking these cases that pose these giant questions that would, depending on how they rule, could completely rewrite the constitutional law about religious exemptions. Yeah, Shelley Warnham's, there's two cases involving teachers at private religious schools. And the issue is the court has long held, and nobody on this call probably would disagree, that religions can pick their own ministers or faith leaders, and that you can't apply a non-discrimination law. Like, you can't tell the Catholic Church you have to hire a female priest. Like, so, and that's uncontroversial. Everyone's agrees with that. That's fine. But there's a question about how broadly to construe that so-called ministerial exception. And these cases, the schools in these cases are asking the Supreme Court to hold that same freedom to not comply with an anti-discrimination law because supposedly you're exercising the core aspects of your religion, that should be applied super broadly to any employee of a religious institution, even if their job doesn't really seem to have anything to do with like preaching or ministering. And that, in this case, it's teachers, but it could be like janitors, it could be like a receptionist, like anybody that works, in this case, at their schools, but at any private religious employer. So it's not great that the court took those cases. We've got very conservative court. They're probably going to do something not great in those cases. And then they've also taken another case called Fulton that's from Philadelphia that's about private adoption agencies that enter in, that get taxpayer money, that enter into contracts with, in this case, it's the city of Philadelphia. And the contract says, hey, you can't discriminate. When you use this money, taxpayer money, you can't discriminate when placing children for adoption. And Catholic Charities is arguing that the Constitution gives it a constitutionally protected right to not place kids with gay couples, same-sex couples, that they have a right to both take the money and yet not comply with the terms of the contract. So that's a scary case too. Yeah, this court is definitely appears to be very much intent on broadening the scope of constitutional religious exemptions, which all is just another reason, y'all, that especially in Texas, we need to be building bridges where we can with those moderate conservative religious folks. I know, Debbie, I know you've done a lot of work around that, and Equality Texas Journal has done a lot of work around that. Given how hostile the courts are to us right now, including the U.S. Supreme Court, we're better off negotiating these things directly in statutory language in a way that hopefully can be narrow and reasonable and cabined, and not, if we leave ourselves to the mercy of the courts right now, we're not going to end up in a good position. And we just need to be building bridges to the moderate people in those communities, because if they get to know us, you know, it's going to be harder for them to support really punitive discrimination against us.
Absolutely.
Very briefly, I would just say that, like, Shannon's absolutely right. I think that unfortunately the Texas courts are also not any better than the Supreme Court. But I do agree with Shannon when it's harder to take away rights, like, once people have them, and more here on the ground in even the small towns that the ACLU works in with students and schools, the kind of local decision makers, school boards, teachers, they're meeting people, they're understanding their stories, and they're realizing that these people are people and they have rights and they deserve to be respected and affirmed and embraced for who they are. And so I think even in some of the most conservative jurisdictions where we're working, we are seeing people have that kind of cultural change. And once people are able to go use the bathroom or locker room that affirms their gender identity, once someone's called by the right name and pronouns, that becomes the norm. And it is harder, even if a really conservative federal judge wants to try to take that away, that'll create more backlash, hopefully, once those rights are clear and established in daily lives of people.
Let me add one hopeful piece, at least with respect to our state courts. Let me say the bad thing first, and let me say the good thing. Our Texas Supreme Court is probably more conservative right now than it's been since 1989. We have three justices that Governor Abbott appointed to the Supreme Court that have worked against marriage equality, worked against abortion rights. And so Texas Supreme Court is not a great place to be. But for the first time in probably 25 years, at least certainly since I started, got my law license, so don't know how old I am, I'm not telling anybody. But we have now Democratic judges on our courts of appeals in our biggest cities, which heretofore, there's some good lawyer language, we have not had. And so because most of our state law is made at the appellate court level, to the extent that we're in bigger cities like Dallas, Houston, San Antonio, and Austin, we have the capability of creating some really good law for folks like us in those larger areas, which is where most of us LGBT Texans live.
Yeah, that's good to know. I think I knew a little bit of that, but not the full picture. So that is very heartening. And I do want to underscore like the power of stories. Last session in for Equality Texas, we had one community member testify a lot in front of legislators on lots of different bills. This particular person lived in Austin, so they were able to be at the Capitol a lot. And we actually had one of those moderate conservative legislators come to us during a really tough vote for him and say, hey, gosh, whenever I think about like voting on this bill, I think about this person. And he actually like said their name. And even though we weren't able to move that legislator all the way over, like you could tell it made such an impact. And he had never seen that perspective before. So the more we can do that and the more we can show people that, hey, we're just people. We're just asking to be treated with like dignity and respect, the more ground we can cover. And the less scary decisions like this we'll hopefully have to face. With that, does anybody have any other questions? Feel free to send us any, we'll put the contact information for Equality Texas on here after this. Send us any questions you have and we can ask these fine panelists, get you an answer. I did want, because a big theme of all of this has been what we can do right now while we're waiting for a decision and the importance of doing something right now. We can send this out in our email afterwards, but it brings you to a screen that has a virtual postcard on it. So since we can't do like in-person postcard parties with folks, we have a giant kind of image of a postcard that says Texans support non-discrimination protections. And we have a sample message for your legislator on there. And this is so, so important because legislators, like in my experience, legislators do tally up all of these contacts, whether it's a phone call, whether it's an email. They know how many of their constituents have said, made an opinion known on an issue, and they track all of that. Even with everything going on, they have staffers who are tracking this. So it is so important to let your legislators know that this is an urgent issue, especially with everything going on in the healthcare situation. It's more important now than ever to make sure that you cannot be fired or evicted or denied any services just because of who you are or who you love. And our legislators need to know that this is a priority. I cannot tell you how many times a legislator has said, well, I don't have that problem in my district. I guarantee you they do. They just haven't heard about it. So we'll have this webinar posted as a recording on our website. You can direct people there. We are also having rally signs, and we were trying to figure out how to recreate the feeling of a rally when we can't actually have the rally. And so we decided that maybe if we could have people create rally signs and take a picture of yourselves holding it and have pictures on our website of all the folks who are with us and who are gathered in community doing that, we could get that same community feeling without actually being able to be there in person. So we will have examples, and that's this graphic over to the right. Feel free to create your own for sure. This is just to get you started. And you can either write in or type in however you feel, why you believe in equality for all. And we'll be able to have a show of force with our community before decision day and when decision day comes down. And then the third thing that leads me to that is make a plan for decision day. So we don't know when it's going to come out, as our panelists mentioned earlier. It could come out anytime between now and the end of June. So just keep an eye out for that. We will have that virtual gathering. We will have resources for you to make sense of the decision and know what you can do. Just because we cannot gather together physically doesn't diminish the power of our community. As Ricardo said, we are resilient, we are strong, and we will be able to show all of that virtually. Well, big thank you to all of our panelists. I know we can't necessarily clap for you here, but you all deserve a huge round of applause. Thank you so much for all of your help in making sense of this and spreading the word and helping us recognize the importance of all this. If you heard this and you're really interested in how the state legislature works, we've got that one up next Monday. We have a full slate of April programming, and we'll likely have a full slate of May programming. So just stay up to date and join us next time.
Well, that's all for this evening. We've been listening to a webinar produced by Equality Texas in early April, dealing with a set of cases currently before the U.S. Supreme Court regarding employment non-discrimination protection. Their website is equalitytexas.org. For Co-op, I'm Bob Daly. Please join us again next week. For now, stay tuned for Roots Train with Dale Smith, next up here on KOOP.org.